CarPlay, set a button on your digital dashboard for WGN, so I'm just a click away. Morning starting at 10. Find out how at WGNradio.com.
It's 35 degrees and sunny at 3:30. Good afternoon, I'm Ron Brown. The news is sponsored by GetMyHappyBack.com. The Pope continues to improve. We'll have the latest. First, a quick look at sports. The Blackhawks host Los Angeles tomorrow. The pregame at 7 o'clock with Charlie Remiliotis. The face-off is at 7:30 with John Weideman and Troy Murray right here on 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. In other sports, the Bulls take on Indiana in about a half an hour. Exhibition baseball, the Cubs are trailing Cincinnati 5-3. The Sox are trailing the L.A. Dodgers 1-0. College basketball today, Wisconsin lost to Michigan State 71-62. Bradley beat Northern Iowa 73-56. UIC is leading Valpo at the moment by 10 points, 68-58. And Illinois State is leading Evansville 42-41. And it was Illinois State Redbirds. Nope, that game is still underway. Illinois State Redbirds are leading the Evansville Purple Aces 42-41. WGN traffic, we are looking at some delays on the Dan Ryan where it's stop and go in the outbound lanes between the Jane Byrne Interchange and 33rd Street, about a 15-minute delay. It's an 11-minute delay on the Kennedy outbound between Montrose and Sayre Avenue, and Gustavo Lakeshore Drive is reporting some delays northbound between Grand and Chicago Avenue. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has rallied his European counterparts behind Ukraine today. Starmer spoke with his 18 fellow leaders at a summit after backing off, or after the U.S. backed off of Ukraine, appeared in jeopardy when President Donald Trump lashed out at Ukrainian President Zelensky on Friday. The Vatican says Pope Francis has remained in stable condition today. He continues to recover from double pneumonia. The 88-year-old Pope did continue to receive high-flow supplemental oxygen overnight, though, and doctors said his prognosis remains guarded, meaning he isn't out of danger. The 97th Annual Academy Awards gets underway tonight. The ceremony kicks off at 6 p.m. It'll be broadcast by ABC and streamed on Hulu. Conan O'Brien is hosting. A private lunar lander has touched down on the moon, delivering a drill and other experiments for NASA. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, mostly sunny with a high of 37. Tonight, a low near 30. Tomorrow, a high of 47. Right now, it's 35 at O'Hare, 36 at Midway, and it's 32 degrees at Waukegan. I'm Ron Brown, WGN News. Next news when it happens, next scheduled news at 4 o'clock.
Searching for a financial partner that truly has your best interest at heart? Join KCT Credit Union, where they're more than just a bank. They're a not-for-profit financial cooperative. KCT members are owners, meaning profits go back to you in the form of lower loan rates, higher savings rates, and fewer fees. Experience personalized service that puts you first. KCT Credit Union, now a division of Consumers Credit Union. Visit kctcu.org. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Do you have silver or gold to sell? Call me, the Antique Lady. Now is the best time. Call the Antique Lady at 773-262-1000. For years, WGN listeners have been calling the Antique Lady to sell their antiques and art. Why go to the mall or send your family treasures through the mail? Call 773-262-1000 for a buyer you know and trust. Bring your sterling silver flatware, trays, teapots, and candlesticks to the Antique Lady. Old, broken, and unworn gold pieces sitting in the drawer can be turned into cash. Deal with a family-owned business that's been in the same location for over 30 years. At 6901 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago, you'll receive a fair price with no pressure to sell. Call 773-262-1000 today.
weeknights. Trust News Nation to bring you the day's events across America, breaking down the issues from all sides with critical analysis that's tough but fair. Elizabeth Farkas, Chris Cuomo, Leland Vittert, Ashley Banfield. The new primetime on News Nation.
So what do you say? Let's get after it.
News with respect for all Americans. Weeknights starting at 6 only on News Nation. Watch News Nation on Xfinity Channel 223, DirecTV Channel 307, and Dish Channel 207, or go to NewsNationNow.com.
You and three friends could win a Tees and Taco Tuesday trip to Tullymore Golf Resort in Michigan. Play 36 holes of world-class golf, savor delicious tacos, and enjoy an overnight stay. Swing into action. Click on WGNRadio.com/contest to enter.
Welcome back. Welcome back. About 137 years ago, if my math is right, five women and possibly more were horribly and brutally murdered in London, and many of their bodies were mutilated and really disfigured. This began the lore and mystery of the world's most famous killer, Jack the Ripper. And I don't know about you, but I have been a Jack the Ripper file for years. I've read all the books. I've seen the movies. I've had my own speculations. But now, just recently, DNA evidence has disclosed the true identity of the killer, and the man who's largely responsible for this discovery is with us today from the UK. Russell Edwards, he's the foremost expert on the topic. He's the author of Naming Jack the Ripper, the definitive reveal. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us from the UK. Russell, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, this is amazing, but can you just, there's a whole generation probably who doesn't really know about the Ripper victims and what happened back then, but can you just kind of quickly summarize what the crimes looked like, and then we're going to talk about how you arrived at the verdict here.
Sure. So there were, over a 10-week period in 1888, between September and November, there were five very gruesome murders that escalated. From the first to the fifth, of what we call unfortunates or fallen women, who at certain times had to sell their bodies just to get a fork in a doss or a night's refuge, if you like. This murderer was given the name of Jack the Ripper due to a letter called the Dear Boss Letter. And after the fifth murder, he just vanished and left this huge mystery that people have been talking about ever since.
So, I was having just a little bit of a hard time understanding you, but the women were prostitutes, correct? They were women who were living in very destitute London. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And back in the day when these happened, there were suspects, correct? And among the suspects, what kind of people were on the list?
Okay. There were only ever three suspects named. That was a guy called Montague John Gillis, Kosminski, and a guy called Michael Ostrog. Two were Polish and one was British. The first one was a barrister, Gillis. He got sacked from the little boys' school that he was teaching at the time. And he was found drowned on the 31st of December in 1888. And that's the only reason why he was named as a suspect. The second one we'll go into, and the third one was Michael Ostrog, who was criminal, insane, and homicidal. Although it's very strange to those who know the story why Ostrog was ever named, because he was actually locked up at the time of the murder, so he wasn't even there. Then we get to just the surname Kosminski, which is the guy that we've named. And Kosminski had strong homicidal tendencies, a bitter hatred of women. And he was there as the strong suspect.
So the
one thing I want to say, Karen, is there are or never were any of the suspects. They are all just fictitious. There are only ever three.
You know, when you look at some of even the music that relates to Jack the Ripper and some of the shows that have been on and the fictionalized accounts, they seem to kind of speculate that this was a person of great power and this was a person who may have been royalty and this was a person who people were protecting, people in power were, you know, protecting the identity. There was none of that in truth. Is that right?
Actually, you know, we discovered from a member of the family, from his family, that the family were Freemasons. So actually there was people in power protecting his identity.
So, I'm sorry, I it's real hard to understand. So you said the person who was actually the perpetrator was a Freemason?
We've definitely discovered his brother. We're looking into his identity, because when he was in the UK, he didn't use the name Alan Kosminski. He used a different name, and we're looking into that right now.
So, you know, let's take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to try to get a little bit clearer audio, because we're really having a hard time understanding. It's a little bit with the accent, but I think it may be the connection, and I know my listeners are getting a little frustrated. So let me do this. Let me put you on hold. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll be continuing our conversation about Jack the Ripper.
Retirement is your reward for a lifetime of hard work. But have you planned for the potential cost of long-term care? Hi, this is Brian Gordon, president of Gordon Associates, where we offer long-term care insurance. As people live longer, the likelihood of needing long-term care increases. Without a plan, those costs can impact your retirement savings and put a huge financial burden on your family. Gordon Associates has been helping families for over 50 years protect their health, retirement, and loved ones. We sit down with families to discuss their insurance options with no cost or obligation. Let us help you create a plan that ensures your care and preserves your financial security. Don't leave the future to chance. Secure your retirement, protect your family, and create a long-term care insurance plan today with Gordon Associates. Call us at 800-533-6242 or visit bestltcplan.com. Gordon Associates Long-Term Care Planning Insurance, because peace of mind is priceless.
Ugh, Phil, you can put a fork in my big bank. They're done. They've ignored me for the last time.
Well, it's about time you moved to Lakeside Bank. They have a beautiful fork.
I don't literally need a fork.
It's a three-pronged fork. Lakeside is responsive, they customize, and execute with great speed.
Those are outstanding prongs.
Lakeside's been great for my business and personal accounts.
It's time to let Lakeside set the table.
Lakeside is responsive, customizes, and gets what you need done, done. Lakeside Bank. It's about time. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Join us in 19th century Paris for an evening of pure romance with La Bohème, an enduring, passionate masterpiece filled with fiery first loves, tragic heartbreaks, and breathtaking spectacle. La Bohème is packed with music you know and love. Don't miss the timeless story that inspired the hit musical Rent. Book your tickets to La Boheme today at lyricopera.org.
Are you or someone you love struggling with opioid addiction, including oxycodone, hydrocodone, fentanyl, or heroin? There's help right here in your community. Symetria Recovery has outpatient options to treat opioid addiction without disrupting your life, using medication therapies that are recognized as the best treatments for opioid addiction. Symetria can stop your withdrawal symptoms immediately so you can focus on your recovery without physical discomfort. Symetria's doctors, pharmacy, and therapists are all located under one roof, so parents and working professionals can overcome opioid addiction while maintaining their normal schedule. Harvard University confirmed that Symetria Recovery has double the success rate of other centers. With same-day or next-day appointments, Symetria can stop your cravings now. We accept most major insurance, so call today and schedule an appointment. Call 800-353-9393. 800-353-9393. That's 800-353-9393.
Famous Jack the Ripper, who'll cut you from head to toe and then sling you in the river. Butcher's knife, he will cut you up like a kipper. If he's gone, surely gone. You meet Jack the Ripper.
Welcome back. We are talking to Russell Edwards. He is the person who's responsible, really, for finding the identity of Jack the Ripper, which just happened recently. Hopefully the audio's a little better. My listeners were getting really ugly here about the audio. Russell, I mean, hopefully this will be a little bit better. Are you still with us?
I am indeed. Is this any better?
It is a little bit better. Great. Okay. So tell us about what is the name of the real Jack the Ripper?
His name is Alan Kuzminski.
Okay.
Alan Kuzminski was... Yes, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. Could you say his name again?
Alan Kuzminski.
Okay. And tell me about who Mr. Kuzminski was and what was his background?
Sure. He was a Polish immigrant Jew that came over to Whitechapel in 1881. He was like a barber surgeon, so he had anatomical knowledge. And one of the main things is he was only 23 when he committed these murders. He was suffering with schizophrenia as well.
So he was on the radar. He was one of the people who was on the radar at the time. And can you tell us how you came to get the items that were necessary to do the DNA testing? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So it was a shawl that was purported to be taken from the fourth murder scene, that of Catherine Eddowes at Mitre Square, on the night of the 29th of September, 1888. And I bought it because of the link of the pattern on the shawl, which is Michaelmas daisies, and Michaelmas itself links three of the five murder dates to the shawl.
So this is just to clarify, it's a shawl. So it's a woman's shawl. And you explained that, in some of your writings and some of your speaking, that this was a shawl that was an expensive shawl that probably wouldn't have been affordable by the women that we're talking about, correct?
Yeah, there is a bit more to that. The dye on it is water soluble. So as Catherine Eddowes was out in the streets in the rain, we don't have the lovely weather that you have over there. The dye would have run, and there's no evidence of that. Plus, the dye itself came from northern Russia. So it's an Eastern European garment.
So are you saying that the shawl actually came from the killer, Kuzminski?
Exactly. That's why we focused on the DNA that he'd left on the shawl.
Okay, so you have DNA, you have blood DNA on the shawl, and you have semen also, is that correct?
That's correct.
So you tested the blood what was the purpose of testing the blood?
We needed to establish that the actual evidence on that shawl related directly to the murder victim. Because the evidence was arterial blood spatter consistent with slashing, and there was evidence of split body parts on the shawl. So we wanted to test the blood to see if it was human, and if it was human, if it would match the murder victim.
And how were you able to...
The way that she was murdered.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, the actual evidence on that shawl matches the murder of Catherine.
And when you say that because you found certain cells that were related to organs that were perforated or something like that, right?
That's correct. That's right. Yeah, we found a kidney cell because he took her kidney with him.
So, how did you tie the blood evidence and the DNA in the blood to this victim? Did you do it through a genealogical study?
We did. We found a direct female descendant of Catherine Eddowes, and it's her we're representing in the courts now.
And so you found the descendants, and did they volunteer then to give you the DNA?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. In fact, she's the great-great-great-granddaughter down the female line of Catherine Eddowes. Yeah, we've known each other now for about 11 years, I would say about 12, 13 years now.
So So you match the blood on the shawl. So you know that she was near that shawl. Her blood was on it. Her body cells were on it. And then you tested the semen. And how did you go about doing that?
We tried to examine the first, because I'm sure you know you can get pulp from inside the tooth. But the United Synagogue, the own cemetery where he's buried, wouldn't allow us to do that. So we found a direct female descendant from his sister. That took about 10 minutes to find it.
And then that person volunteered to give you DNA, and you were able to trace that person's DNA to Kaczynski.
Absolutely.
Wow. So this took a lot of time. How long did this take all in, since the day that you purchased the shawl at auction to the time you got this positive match with Kaczynski?
The whole scientific process took 4 years, and the actual journey took me 14 years.
When, you know, since you study this, and I know you give tours in London, I've been on the Ripper Tour twice. It's fascinating. It's really spooky. It's a really interesting area of London that's now a little bit more, it's a little nicer than it was back in the late 1800s. Did you always suspect it was Kaczynski, or did you really have your money on somebody else?
I didn't think it was. In fact, I just didn't know. I had somebody I was looking at called Frederick Bailey Deeming, and he's linked to my hometown, and that's the only way I had an interest, because he was a murderer. But it was Scotland Yard who told me the name of Jack the Ripper when I told them the link of Michaelmas to the murder dates. So it was actually Scotland Yard that gave me the name Kaczynski. I've never looked at anybody else since or before other than Demon.
So usually serial killers continue to kill, and they sometimes ramp up in their number of killings and the gruesomeness of them and the violence of them. What do you know about Kaczynski and why he may have stopped at 5? Or do you think that there are more victims?
He stopped at 5 because just after Mary Kelly, the fifth victim, he attacked his sister. And the two brothers, Wolf and Isaac, had had enough of him, and they gave him up to the police. Now, what I'm about to tell you is from direct Scotland Yard records. So he was taken to a seaside home near Brighton in the south of England, and he was unhesitatingly identified by an eyewitness. That the name is Israel Swartz, who saw him just before he attacking Elizabeth Stride, the third murder victim, shortly before she was discovered with a throat cut. But Israel Swartz wouldn't testify, so they had the murderer, but they couldn't actually prosecute him. And that was the conundrum the police faced at that time. That's what happened.
So when he went to Brighton and he was there after attacking his sister, was he in some sort of lockup or some sort of mental institution? You know, what was he out on the street?
Yeah, and what they did at first is they put him under house arrest with his brother up back in Whitechapel, and then shortly after they put him in a workhouse. Then they put him in a place called Colney Hatch Asylum, where they kept him for 3 years, and then they moved him to Leavesden Asylum, where he spent the rest of his life. The interesting thing, Karen, is the records of him they've disappeared. 20 years worth of asylum records have just vanished.
What do you make of that? Is that something nefarious, or do you think that was intentional? And why would somebody do that intentionally?
Exactly. So when they go into the asylum, inmates or patients, they're photographed. There's no photograph of him. It's interesting that his name is Kaczynski. They never put his first name. He's been mentioned twice, officially by McNaughton, Sir Melvin McNaughton, and then by Donald Swanson, who actually names Kaczynski as the suspect. So they always knew, and I just think that they just didn't want anybody to know, and it's been kept this secret for so many years. because I think that the police bungled up the investigation and it come back to bite them. That's what I believe.
Interesting. But, you know, thankfully he was locked up because given the crimes and the nature of the crimes and the gruesome nature of the crimes, he certainly would have continued had he had the opportunity. Is there any doubt in your mind?
Absolutely. Definitely. I completely agree with you. There's no way he would have stopped. Not at all.
And remind us, you know, you said he was a barber slash surgeon. We all know from, if you're Jack the Ripper, watched anything or read anything about it, it was pretty obvious that the perpetrator had some sort of anatomical knowledge by way of how he carved them up and how he removed body parts. When you say he was a barber surgeon, what did that entail as an occupation?
So basically, when they first start out, they say people go to train as surgeons. Some become surgeons and some become, believe it or not, or barbers or hairdressers. And they perform minor operations, so not as detailed as the surgeons. But interestingly enough, when we get to the murder of Catherine Eddowes specifically, where her body organs were taken, they were taken in a very accurate manner in only a 4-minute window, which is all the time he had. So there's no way he didn't just rip them up. He actually, I wouldn't say he performed perfect surgery, but he certainly knew where the kidney was, and he certainly knew where the uterus was, and those are the two body parts he took.
So,
and also quite dark as well.
So what do we know he did? I mean, some of the victims, as I recall, the body parts were removed and just left on the bed, left on the body. Were some of them actually removed from the crime scene?
Yes.
And what do we think? What do we think he did with them?
Do you know what? In the second book, The Definitive Reveal, now we know that there is a direct, provable Freemasons link. This all links to the blood oaths for the Freemasons, the way the ritual is carried out. And in there, when the body parts, they talk about the body parts being burned as part of the ritual.
Well, so, but Freemasons, I mean, is this something that has gone on for all these years? I've never heard that before. And what, you know, so his brothers are Freemason. He takes these body parts and it's of benefit somehow to the Freemasons.
It's part of the ritual. It's a specific ritual in the UK. I'm sure the Freemasons in America, because it's still a very big thing over in the UK. And what I can tell you is more important, and taking an exception, it still is now, but more then as well. And I know that the upper echelons of the police force were Freemasons.
Interesting. So maybe there is some truth to the idea that there were people in power who were protecting the identity of the true culprit here. One final line of questioning here is the victim, the perpetrator, obviously he has living relatives that volunteered to give the DNA. Their identity is confidential. Is that right? They haven't come out in public. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
And they don't want to. Are they? How do they feel knowing that they are related to the most famous serial killer in the history of the world?
You know what? I've been in contact and friends with one of the descendants for over 10 years now. And the whole family very, very clearly told me only the other week that not one member of any part of their family wants to be given their identity out at all. And basically, just because it just takes that one person to think you're related to this is what you did to these women, and their lives could be in danger, so they're certainly never going to come from me. But they take this very seriously because they know it was him. And it's interesting, I had a voice recording that she sent me from one of her relatives in England, and that was quite concerning. So their identities. I actually signed for the descendant that gave me her DNA to match it to him. I had to sign an agreement that I would never ever divulge her identity.
And you know what? Who cares? I don't care to know who they they have nothing to do with what a relative did, you know, century ago.
So,
if they want to protect their identity for whatever reason, I have absolutely no problem with that. Thank you so much for joining us. Russell Edwards is the author of Naming Jack the Ripper and The Definitive Reveal. And if you go to London, you can look him up. He gives great tours, the Jack the Ripper tours. And it's something that it would be really fun for you to do and very interesting if you're so inclined. Thank you so much for joining us, Russell. Take care.
Thank you very much, Karen. Thank you.
All right. And when we come back, we are going to be talking with Scott Turow. He's really my favorite legal author ever. He's a Chicago lawyer. He's a Chicago author. He wrote Presumed Innocent. He has sold millions and millions of books that have been translated in 40 different languages. And he's going to be talking about his new book, which is called Presumed Guilty, on the Karen